Welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast, where we amplify the stories of regular people practicing anti-racism in their everyday lives. Every single one of us has the ability to create real and meaningful change right where we are. I'm your host, Carrie Sawyer, and I've got the stories to prove it. I can't wait to introduce you to these people, these change leaders, people who saw a need and decided to take action. To me, this is so inspiring, showing the powerful idea of everyday activism. I hope that you take away at least some small inspiration and use it to act and create more good in your world too. Let's get started, y'all. Hello, hello, and welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast. I am so happy that you're here today and so excited to introduce you to today's guest. Now, Erin Rocchio is my guest today, and I feel like we met through a friend of a friend, and she was just one of those people who I connected with right away, like-minded and very intelligent, very driven, and just like fundamentally a really good person, a really good woman, a really good mother. And so I actually had her on the Inclusion First Project, and we had a really fantastic conversation there. And so I'm excited to have her again here just to see how her journey in activism is continuing to evolve. It is my pleasure to introduce you to my friend, Erin Rocchio. She is an executive coach and partner at Evolution, where she helps CEOs, founders, and executive leaders to grow in effectiveness and impact. She is the founder of Wholeness at Work, where she creates accessible and authentic tools to sustain human flourishing and evolution. She is also a published author, which I love so much. Erin is Mama Bear to Two in San Diego. She is seasoned in the world of high performance leadership teams and creating equitable cultures. Erin is deeply committed to ensuring all positive change makers are supported, sustained, and whole in their work. Please join me in welcoming to the Inclusion First Podcast, Erin Rocchio. Hi, Erin. Thank you so much for being on the Inclusion First Podcast. I am so excited to have this conversation with you.
Yay. It's so fabulous to be here again, Carrie. Thank you for having me. My name is Erin Rocchio. I'm an executive coach and I'm a partner at Evolution. I am also an author and founder of Wholeness at Work. And my deep commitment is that people find sustained well-being in their leadership roles, whatever that means, whether it's leading a global company or their family or their community, that they don't have to sacrifice their health and wholeness for impact.
Yes. So Erin is a veteran here on the Inclusion First Podcast/project. We had an incredible webinar, so do check that out on YouTube. And now she's back to have this incredible session and answer some questions. So let's jump right into it.
Let's do it.
All right, Erin. So to you, what does it mean to be an activist in 2021? And do you consider yourself to be one?
Yes, I do. And I would say what it means to me this year is about integrating this mindset and kind of way of being of holding equity and belonging. Inclusion as a way of kind of operating in the world. So it's like every space that I go into, that's present. And so what that means to me is it's a little bit disruptive in some places, and in other places it's just fine because that's how they are. But in other places it feels more challenging. Like I'm kind of constantly pushing against what is to help people see things in a new way. And so for me, it's not like something that I turn on like, oh, now I'm going to be an activist today with this particular group. It's like, no, this is kind of something I have chosen as a, personal commitment and value. And I'm really trying to consciously bring that into every place and space and conversation I go into.
See, this is why I wanted to talk to you. Totally.
I mean, and I don't know that that's shifted this year, other than I think what one of the things I'm seeing as an executive coach and organizational consultant is that there are certain spaces in corporate America that are now primed. And so it's less like shocking for me to come in and say, hey, what the heck about equity and, you know, whatever the question may be. Like, they're seeking it out, and a lot of traditional spaces are wanting to move in this direction and kind of don't know how. And so there's more of a welcoming, I think, this year.
I mean, that's really great. So one of the things that I've heard from other practitioners is people and organizations definitely being more open, seeking out these conversations. And then when the person, the DEI, the expertise comes in and says, like, the R word, for example, racist, racism, systemic racism, yeah, they're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, I don't know about that. So number one, have you encountered that? How are you talking about race and racism, especially in today's climate? Are people even open to that? Or do you see people really just wanting to stay in the realm of, like, inclusion and equity, which racism is definitely part of that, but it's an easy word to, like, hide behind, right? Like, oh, we just want to do inclusion. Like, we want to get into the hard, uncomfortable stuff. How have you seen that play out?
Yeah. So one thing I want to preface is I am not a diversity, equity, inclusion, sustainability expert. I partner with them, and I also kind of want to be a voice and an amplifier of that. So I just want to set the record straight.
Yes.
There's people like you that are much more experienced than I am in this. I have seen so I'm going to use the lens of kind of consciousness.
Sure.
And organizations that are more conscious around this, they're actively taking on anti-racism policies.
Right.
And trying to build culture for anti-racism, in which we talk very openly about systemic racism. They are creating very intentional spaces for marginalized groups to have voice, and they are having a lot of pushback. They're experiencing a lot of, you know, white lash, if you will, about, like, oh, I'm not a racist. And so it doesn't matter how much education you do there. I think right now there's still a lot of the opposing force trying to reclaim its power or retain power, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
I have some other client organizations who haven't even gotten to racial oppression, are still kind of in the realm of, like, oh my God, we have gender oppression here. And we have oppression against, you know, people of different sexual orientations and gender identities. And so for them, using inclusion and belonging as the language feels even like a big deal for them.
Sure.
And then with that, then it's like, once we get in and build trust, then we come in and have conversations about racial oppression and systemic oppression and racism. And so it's kind of like feeling and listening to the different systems and where they're at and their level of consciousness, and kind of trying to meet them and then slowly push them forward.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. I just wanted to ask that question because I was wondering what it looks like out in the world right now when people are trying to have these more conscious, if you will, conversations. So, Erin, what I really appreciated about what you shared earlier was, you know, you're bringing this lens, this activist lens, into all the different situations that you're in. And it's not always a, like, you know, push out, like, explosive force. It just totally depends. Like, sometimes there's resistance, sometimes there's not, but you are still kind of holding your space, holding your center around these values as you move through the world. And then, you know, how people bounce off that or come into that, you know, you're adjusting and you know, flexing and flowing with that is what I heard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And I think that being conscious of my center and the power and the energy I'm bringing to this conversation,
mm-hmm.
you know, I have to be really aware of it and really mindful, because for some folks, like, it'll blow them away. And for other folks, if I really am restrained, then it actually invites them in.
Mm.
And so, like, I can be very gentle about it. It doesn't have to be overt. It can be more subtle. And so I'm trying to practice, where do I be overt and explicit and calling something out? And we've talked about this before. And where do I need to actually be more subtle and open and gentle with my energy and still, you know, take a stand.
Sure.
And it's feels like a little bit like we're in the world of ninjas, because it's like, this is not easy stuff to do. You know, as you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So are you aware of this, you know, moving in this lens, in this space more in your personal life or professional life or both? How does that show up for you?
It's definitely in both. I think I have the privilege of working inside, I work inside an industry of organization development and human development that is very, I would say, more progressive and aware. And so it makes it easier. Like, I feel like I have access to resources and people and things that, you know, others want but don't have. So I feel very lucky about that professionally. And then I am partnered with some phenomenal human beings who I get to do this work with. So that part actually feels like a gift. And then I can take that professional, those gifts and resources and human beings, and then kind of feed them into my personal life. And I'll just, you know, be candid, like where, one of the things I've been really looking at, since, you know, let's say like 4 years, even, you know, pre the murder of George Floyd, was like, how do I shake up my personal life? Because in at least where I live, where we live in San Diego, it is still very class oriented and racially oriented. I don't know. This is my experience. And I really don't like that. It makes me very uncomfortable. And so I'm trying to intentionally break up the natural bubbles that exist. So like we moved to a neighborhood that, you know, has a predominant racial makeup and a predominant class makeup. And I'm trying to really break that up. In other words, it's like not just get stuck in that momentum, mm-hmm. but intentionally reach out and invite in mm-hmm. personally different people, because it's important to me. It's important to me as a human. It's important to me as a parent. You know, I don't want my kids to think like, oh, this is what life is like. No, because we're missing out on the richness of humanity. So I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And thank you for sharing that. Again, what I love is like looking around at your situation and kind of having this critical thinking about, okay, like what is happening around me? What's happening in front of me? How do I want it to be? And what things can I do to interrupt the stuff that maybe is mm-hmm. is less diverse, more homogeneous, like all those kinds of things, right? Yeah. So it's an intentional thing. And it sounds like it's like kind of a like a habit, right? Like it's part of who you are, which is really where I would love to help people to move to, right? Like this is something mm-hmm. like it's in all walks of your life. And I'm not like saying, oh, racism is everywhere, though it is in different formats and manifesting in different ways. But there's opportunity for us to create more inclusion and more equity everywhere around us, from our families to the communities that we participate in, to where we volunteer to work, like and everywhere in between, right? And it's different in each of those places, what you can bring and what needs to be done. But having that lens to start to see that, and then to start to think, what can I do? How can I be an interrupter? Or how can I bring more inclusion to this moment, to this group, to this space?
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it definitely takes a lot of intentionality, because I think obviously our system is not set up for equity and inclusion and kind of the full range of human experience. And we've intentionally cut people off and cut people out. And obviously that's not right. And I think we've talked about this before, like there's a ton of research that shows that white people who hold power and privilege suffer the most. Well, I won't say the most, but they suffer equally, especially in health outcomes. Like there was a ton of great data that says this is not actually benefiting anyone.
Right.
Racism and systemic oppression across any dimension hurts everyone.
Yeah.
And so we got to freaking wake up and do what we can. Right?
No, absolutely. So Erin, what would you say is like the number one thing or one of the most important things that you have learned doing this work, walking, and what by this work, I mean, being an activist, like walking in the world with this lens that you have between your personal, your professional life? What are a couple of like key learnings that you can share with our audience?
Yeah, I think the First one is you have to be willing to put something at risk. Because it takes a lot of courage to speak truth to power, and you have to be willing to deal with the ramifications of that. And whatever way that might mean for you, even a small conversation with someone in your personal life, you know, being willing to say, like, I love our relationship, but I'm also willing to have you be mad at me for me to tell you how your words are harmful.
Right.
So you have to be willing to, and I think capable of holding that discomfort. So it takes something, and it takes, and that's the thing that, you know, I've challenged myself with, is like, what privilege and what resources am I willing to put at risk to hold this lens and this way of being? I'd say the other thing is just to, like, talk less and listen a lot more. And, you know, constantly learning, listening from, you know, people who have experienced these things directly. So listening from a lot of Black women, and just, like, my greatest teachers, you know, just shut up, listen. And then take that seriously. And those are legitimate experiences, and then make them right where I can. So, you know, and I think the third thing is, this is lifelong. This is not a trendy, like, oh, this is going to be cute for my followers on Instagram. No, this is a mature choice that we all need to step into, I hope. Or we have the opportunity to step into, and it's not something that you turn on and off. So it's like you either commit to it or you don't. So being willing to take that long view and know that, you know, you can mess up, and but keep learning and keep trying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I love that so much. I mean, we talk a lot about this being a lifetime thing on the Inclusion First Project, and, you know, you are where you are, and there's no judgment in that. All we can ask is that you keep taking steps forward. And falling down doesn't mean that you stop. You learn where things went wrong and you get some more education, and then you keep going and you try not to make that same mistake again, but you keep going. And I think that, I mean, that's so relevant in so many things in life, just going, but especially here in this anti-racism activist journey. And I also love what you said about listening. I think that that's a skill that, you know, we could all work on, and listening to understand, not listening to jump in, not listening to challenge, like, just listening and then accepting that what someone is sharing with you, even if it's something batshit crazy you've never heard happen to anyone in your entire life, you are one person. There are billions of people. The experiences are so varied. You don't know everything. And I'm talking to myself as much as I'm talking to everyone else. But we don't know everything. And so to reject someone's experience is actually insane. Right?
Yeah.
It's on the map.
Yeah. That's right. Well, and I think some of the things you're saying, Carrie, are so powerful. And they also kind of just remind me that they require some really important muscle building. And this is why kind of like doing the work, this is not like easy stuff. It requires you build skill. Like, we're not trained. Most of us are not trained how to be great listeners and how to, like, hold multiple perspectives and, you know, all these things. So there's, it's not easy, and it definitely takes practice and it takes work to build the skills to be able to do what you're saying, which is to say, yeah, I have one perspective out of 3 billion or whatever, and all are valid.
Yes.
Right. But we don't necessarily come in to life with that mentality or that skill set. So we just keep working at it, keep building it.
Yeah. And I think the commitment to do the work, to keep learning, to start learning in a lot of cases, right? Like, you can't really be on this path if you're not going to find some way to learn. It's so funny. This story is hilarious to me. You can tell me what you think. But so I was doing some interviews of people on how they define racism. And I was interviewing my uncle. And my uncle, he's 74, 75, white CEO, been a CEO since he was like 25. So a very particular, you know, what we would consider privileged life experience. Now, he's an amazing person. He has a very, very varied experience. And so I was asking him, you know, how do people learn more about racism? This is part of my interview questions. And he's like, Google it. And I'm like, well, what about the people who say that like they don't like to read? And he was like, well, then stay racist. Like, you have to do this work. Like, it's not an option. You have to, if you're not reading, you need to be listening, like watching, like having discussions, taking classes. There's so many different ways. It's like, that is hilarious because it's, I mean, it's true.
And you know what? And I made, I feel like one of the things that I would call like a mistake as I was stepping into this learning was I remember asking a dear friend of mine, like, I want to be more conscious of trauma, particularly like with my clients and racial trauma. And he was like, why are you asking me? I'm a Black man. Go Google it. And I was like, oh my God, you're right.
Yeah.
Why did I even do that? And so like I've stepped in it too. And all it took was one Google search to realize there's like millions of books written about racial trauma. There's workshops there, you know, it's like,
there's so much,
there's so much out there. And the big thing I think that I'm seeing with people in my life, like broadly, not just immediate circle, but like broadly, is this idea that, and this is the barrier I think a lot of us white people have to get through, is like listening to you and validating your experience is not a threat to my experience.
Right.
It has nothing to do with me. And yet everything to do. You know, it's like you are whole and powerful and complete, and you have an experience that I need to learn from. And it means nothing, that it doesn't invalidate anything that I've been through or anything that I've generated or created for myself or what have you. And I feel like that's a big hang up for a lot of white people, is like, especially with all this noise about critical race theory, it's like acknowledging racism in our system does not mean, you know, it doesn't invalidate your, anyway, I could go off.
That's like a whole episode in and of itself. But
I know
this idea that, and I think, I mean, this shows up in so many of the like facets of our identity. It's like we feel like we're being attacked and we're not, like we feel threatened and we're not, whether that's in your interpersonal relationships, like at work, like with your children, like it's this like constant fear of like being attacked. And so we lash out or we reject or we like pull back, like we shut down all the defense mechanisms. But this is not an attack. This is an exchange of information. And just like any information, in this case, you're just holding space for someone's human experience that you know nothing about, and they've given you the gift of sharing with you, right? It's not, you don't need to analyze it. You don't need to validate it. You don't need to like do anything. You're just listening, like literally listening, like a movie.
You're just being with them.
It was a movie. Just pretend. Like you don't, you're not a critic. You're just watching. You're getting up and you're leaving when the movie is over. That's actually how I watch movies. People are like, what did you think? I'm like, I don't know. It was cool. Like, you know, I like gasped when I was supposed to gasp, and I like cried when I was supposed to cry. I was in the moment. I was just listening. I was just experiencing it, right? So.
Yeah. And you're speaking, like what I love about what you're saying, Carrie, is you're speaking to kind of this important ability to just be present with someone.
Yeah.
And just be with them. There's nothing to do. There's nothing to quote unquote fix in that moment other than to just be with them. And that is definitely something we are not trained to do until we do deeper work. But that's exactly what's needed, I think, for us as a society, is like learning how to just freaking be with each other.
Yep. No, absolutely.
You know,
that's really great, Erin. So, okay, last question for you. Well, maybe, but the last of the one. So, one of the things that I invite people to do at the Inclusion First Project is to ask a question on anti-racism, even if they think it's dumb, even if they think it might be racist, even if they're afraid to ask it. And so the question that I have for you, what question do you have related to anti-racism, activism, this space, what's happening in our world right now that you are like afraid to ask?
Hmm. Thank you for asking me, because I hadn't really thought about it in this way before. But I think the one of the things that I noticed come up for me is like, I want to acknowledge, in particular, Black people in my life and friends, and I want to acknowledge your experience. And I feel like I have to be, one of my friends said, be thoughtful, but not careful. And I don't quite know how to be thoughtful and not careful all the time. Like, I find I'm trying to be more careful because I don't want to do something dumb, you know?
Sure.
And it mostly comes up in the realm of like, I want to appreciate or acknowledge you.
Sure.
And differences between us. Like, wow, this is me so dumb. I'm like, God, your hair looks so beautiful. And then I'm like, is that racist to say that?
Sure.
So I don't say anything, but then I'm withholding my appreciation for you.
Yeah.
And that doesn't feel good either.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I think like it's our fear of like being racist, and we are. So boom, there you go. We don't have to be afraid of it anymore. And also, especially and this totally matters who you're talking to, right? Like if it's a stranger, please don't like try to create a meaningful moment with someone who doesn't know you. But if it's someone that's in your circle, it could even be like, you know, an opportunity for a learning moment and vulnerability. And, you know, you could try the thing that you want to say and see how it goes. And you could even try the thing you want to say and be like, and guess what I was doing? Like, I feel like recently I've been asking my female friends how much they make and what salaries are, which we're not supposed to talk about money, right? And so then I might caveat, like, I'm asking you this because I'm reading this book and I'm trying to like get more comfortable with money, right? So I'm like kind of helping myself feel more comfortable by like over explaining. But still with a friend, they're like, oh, versus like, that's not any of your business. Or maybe they'll just be like, I make $115,000. Like whatever it is, they might not, I have no idea how they're going to react, but I make myself feel better by like explaining like what I'm doing or what's happening in my head in that moment, because we have that relationship and they'll be like, oh yeah, no big deal. You know?
Yeah. So like setting some context, like, hey, I'm trying this out.
That was the short way of saying it. Thank you, Erin. Yeah. Context. Absolutely. And with people that care about us, you know, there's a lot of grace that's given. And, you know, being aware of that and appreciating that, not stepping on that, but still knowing that that's likely there.
Yeah. I'm hearing like something that feels really true, which is don't force or like create fake relationship. If you don't have one, create real relationship.
Yeah. And then there's the opportunity for these different conversations and these different layers of vulnerability to come out naturally, right?
Right. Like, yeah, like humans will do.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Do we have time for one more question?
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
Okay. So this is the last question. For sure.
Let's do it. Great.
So Erin, for the people who are trying to figure out how they walk more in this space, how they apply this lens more broadly, even how they like start to apply it, right? Maybe they're not yet. What advice would you give for someone who wants to step into anti-racism, into activism, into really embodying what that looks like, not just on the random one-off, but like as part of who they are?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what I would say is there's really like two things that have been really important for me, and maybe it'll help someone else. One is put yourself in a situation where you have to learn deeply about systemic oppression. Like really don't just do a 1-hour webinar, like go do a course or, you know, read 20 books. I mean, like deeply immerse yourself in it where it's not something that feels like a check the box activity, but feels really significant, and meaningful. And then two, I think the biggest thing for me, why this has felt so vital and part of my DNA, is like really seeing how I have even experienced systemic oppression as a woman. And even as a white woman with a lot of privilege, like getting in touch with my own story and my own pain has created a bit of a fire for me. So it's deeply connected to my own experience. And then I want to go and be of service to other people who might and are feeling and experiencing that. I mean, those two things really were my catalyst. So maybe they will help someone else. But it really, I think you this cannot be a conceptual or intellectual exercise. This has to be something that kind of hits you in your heart and hits you in your gut. And, you know, it's got to work on you first, I think.
Awesome. Erin, thank you so much. This has been amazing, as always. Is there a place where people can learn more about the work that you're doing, about your book, like anywhere you want to direct people to?
Thank you so much, Carrie, for having me. I just love being in conversation with you, especially about this, but I appreciate it always. So I'd say the easiest place for people to connect with me is at ourwholenessatwork.com. And there you'll find my Wholeness at Work coaching programs. I've got a new book out. We're doing some new really cool things around this deep work for self and organizations to allow and support people in sustained well-being. And being inclusive, being anti-racist is a vital component in that process. So ourwholenessatwork.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being here, Erin. You're amazing.
Thank you. You're amazing. So inspired by you. Thanks for having me, friend.
Yay. Thank you for listening to the Inclusion First podcast. We are always collecting and answering your most important questions on anti-racism. So if there's something on your mind, head on over to theinclusionfirstproject.org and click on Ask a Question. We'd love for you to give us your like, your share, your follow, and especially your review, wherever you find us. Thank you so much again for listening, and we will talk to you next time.